And it is 6:31 today, so I'm going to get us going. We have some attendees. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Thursday, March 10th, 2022, Bellevue Transportation Commission. We continue to meet virtually over Zoom, as we were just discussing. For everyone here, please remember to keep yourself muted to avoid any background noise. Commissioners may participate in the meeting by using the raise hand function. I have my little window here to make sure I am seeing your hands, but if for some reason I don't see it for a while, please let me know. I will do my best to keep track. The chat function is not enabled for these meetings. And now I'm going to proceed with the roll call. Commissioners, remember to unmute. Vice Chair Satch?
Here.
Commissioner Beeson?
Present.
Commissioner Kurtz?
Here.
Commissioner Rapun?
Here.
Commissioner Hallen? Did I say that correct? Was he here? Not here. Is he excused, Kevin, or just to know?
I haven't heard from Commissioner Hallen, so I expect that he'll be here maybe a little bit late.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Ting.
Yeah.
Okay, and we do have a quorum. So I'm going to move on to approval of the agenda, and I would like to introduce a slight amendment, to the agenda. I move we shift the mobility implementation plan topic to the first item in our study session ahead of the other three study session topics. Is there a second?
I second it.
All those in favor, please say aye.
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 The ayes have it. Motion passes. The agenda is amended. So are there any objections to approving the agenda as amended? Hearing none, the agenda is approved. Okay, we move on to oral and written communications. I actually haven't asked if there's anyone signed up. Kevin, did you get any official signups?
No one signed up through the official online sign up channel. We do have a couple people as attendees
here.
May wish to speak, and I also sent you a correspondence earlier today from somebody who happens to be on the attendee list tonight.
So if you would like to speak now, please raise your hand. Okay. No takers. Let's give it a second in case sometimes it's hard to find the button that you need to press. But it looks like it's safe enough to move on. So our next item on the agenda, we have communications from City Council, Community Council Boards, Commissions, and we have Council Member Zan here with us today. Welcome, Council Member. Do you have any communications from City Council for the Commission?
Yeah, I would say that in line with the things that you guys are going to be voting on tonight, right, the mobility implementation plan and the comp plan starting that work, at the PSRC Transportation Policy Board today, it was a very fascinating discussion about the regional transportation plan, and they're hoping to get that adopted within the next couple of months. And I will say that there were a lot of comments that were received, both from public agencies like the City of Bellevue, as well as interested organizations that are related to transportation, as well as community members. And so I think it's actually very much in line with the things that you're talking about here, that some of the ideas that they talked about that were important around climate and environment, safety, how we align so that our safe systems approach puts the region at a good way to compete for federal dollars that are also centered on a safe systems approach. Ped and bike as priorities, water quality. And so I just wanted to say that I think that what you're doing here is very much in alignment with what we're looking at regionally around our transportation plan for Vision 2050. And so it's an exciting time in terms of how we really align all of our plans to be able to compete successfully for state and federal funding. The other one I will just mention is that today is the last day of the state legislative session. And my understanding is that, I haven't checked, but I believe that the transportation, the Move Washington Forward transportation plan was going to pass today. And it does include funds to be able to support the gap of the 405-167 with the bond revenue reduction during COVID. So that's exciting that we'll be able to keep that project on track for the bus rapid transit on 405. And it also includes the funding gap for the East Rail. So I believe there's about $18 million that was needed in order to complete the work for that steel, old steel bridge that's over I-90, as well as it funds one of the components on the Mountain to Sound Greenway project. That's also a gap of that the city's been advocating for transportation funding. So I think actually today is a pretty exciting day for transportation all the way around, and excited to be here while we're also voting some of these things out of the Transportation Commission to the council.
Thank you so much, council member. Really appreciate your comments. Do any other commissioners have any reports or anything they'd like to share? All right, I'm going to move on to staff reports then. Kevin?
No staff reports this evening, Madam Chair.
Wow. All right. We don't have a public hearing. So we're moving on to the meet. We have a packed study session today, so we'll see if we can make it through efficiently. The first item, as per the updated agenda, is the mobility implementation plan and our final MIP transmittal. So today we have two actions on the implementation plan. At the end of staff's presentation, I don't know how long it is or how much you're going to go through it, but we'll be seeking a motion. I'll be seeking a motion to recommend the Mobility Implementation Plan Volume 1 and its Appendix Volume 2 to the City Council. And then separately, I'll be seeking another motion to approve the MIP transmittal letter to the City Council. And just as a quick reminder, I know Kevin has made some reminders via email, but on procedures for motion, so a commissioner, preferably not the chair, will introduce a motion, and another commission must second the motion. At that time, we can have a motion on the table, and we can have a discussion and introduce amendments to that motion. Each amendment must be discussed and voted individually, and only one amendment can be on the table open at a given time, or if you can have more than one, I get lost, so... We should not have more than one. So I just want to make sure everybody recalls it gets a little sticky sometimes. So hopefully we can get through our motions and our voting and our amendments cleanly tonight. So with that, I'll hand it over Kevin or Chris.
Hey, thanks, Madam Chair. And Chris is my co-pilot today, and he is sharing the screen of a very brief presentation tonight on the mobility implementation plan. What we want to do with this presentation is set up the votes that the chair just discussed. But I wanted to through this short presentation acknowledge the small changes that staff and the consultant team made to the content of the mobility implementation plan, based on feedback that we received at the February 10th briefing and also in email and other correspondence after that briefing. So I want to just go through that really quickly. And Chris, next slide. Chris will be running the show today because I am not capable of doing that. So as the chair mentioned, I'll review the chapter amendments real quickly, and then we'll have a motion to approve the MIP, followed by a review of the council transmittal letter and amendments thereto, and a motion to approve that letter. So again, these are clarifications or responses to questions that we received since February 10th. In the introduction section, the commission wanted to ensure that the mobility implementation plan addressed two issues related to sustainability, both fiscal sustainability and environmental sustainability, both of which would support a transportation system that accommodates growth and is consistent with GMA. In chapter two, the layered network, we had an actual couple corrections to figure eight, which is the bike network map. There were some stray lines that only a person who would know the bike network would catch, and that would be me. So we corrected those bike network lines on the map on figure eight. And then there was a question about where the length and volume of primary vehicle corridors came from. There was a conversation with the Transportation Commission back last summer, looking at the foundation provided by the HCM, the Highway Capacity Manual. I should have spelled that out in the slide, but the HCM is a guidance document that transportation planners and engineers can use across the country as a place to start for the conversation to identify this type of component of the transportation system. So the Transportation Commission recommended that the corridor length be between 1/2 and 2 miles, and that the volume on these corridors be greater than or equal to 10,000 vehicles per day. With the performance metrics, we found another omission in the MIP. We had failed to provide the performance metrics for bicycle facilities at intersections. The commission in its MLOS work in 2017 did provide a list of components that you would implement at intersections to make sure that the level of traffic stress along a bicycle corridor carries through the intersection, so the intersection doesn't become a barrier. And we also wanted to just clarify that the level of traffic stress calculations can be applied to arterial streets as well as non-arterial streets. And another extract from the Highway Capacity Manual that the Commission discussed in its 2017 MMLOS report: the typical urban travel speed is characterized as 40% of the speed limit on that street. Okay, chapter four is the performance management areas. We just wanted to make sure that everybody knew that both type one and type two performance management areas each consist of three separate geographies. Type one PMA is downtown Bell Red and Wilburton East Main, and type two PMA is Crossroads, Eastgate, and Factoria, and the type three PMAs is everything else. In terms of performance targets, the commission expressed, and we wanted to make sure that this was mentioned in the MIP, that physical gaps in the network for both PEDs and bikes are higher priority than upgrading an existing facility that may not meet the performance metrics that are identified in the MIP. Also to clarify that the transportation facilities plan, the 12-year resource-constrained transportation plan, includes sort of generic projects or generic programs rather that have a allocation of funding. And each of those programs has specific objectives and project prioritization criteria, but each of those programs has a lifespan that extends beyond the time period in which specific projects have been identified. So there's resources available within those programs, but not all of them are assigned to specific projects. That they'll be, as some projects get built and fall off the list, others on the front of the line will get added. And a question came up about the vehicle performance, and we were basing that existing conditions report on 2019 pre-pandemic data. Okay, chapter six, project ID and prioritization. Again, the performance target gaps are the place to start. The appendix has a list of all the performance target gaps, that for all the modes in the transportation system. The MIP document itself has the maps, and the appendix has line item of all the performance target gaps. When looking to create a candidate project list that the TFP can incorporate, the MIP goals and the layered network context are part of that public process. The layered network is a useful context because that can identify that can identify support for land use, of course, but also indicates potential relative utilization of a potential project, especially for a ped and bike project. For instance, in a performance management area one locale, you might expect to have more pedestrians than in a performance management or a PMA3 type locale. Except sometimes, in the PMA3s, there are pedestrian destinations like schools and shopping and libraries and community centers. And those also would have relatively higher pedestrian or bicycle utilization relative to a place in the PMA3 that doesn't have any of those pedestrian destinations. And also to clarify that the environmental stewardship plan has metrics that are embedded into project identification, prioritization, and performance. But also note that environmental constraints or land use constraints, fiscal realities, community support, all of those types of considerations go into the project prioritization. And again, that project prioritization process in the MIP feeds into the potential list of projects for consideration of the transportation facilities plan. Okay, so concurrency. The council approved the concurrency policies last November, and part of the job of the MIP is to kind of flesh out a little bit of the detail about how concurrency would work in a multimodal system. So the MIP clarifies that concurrency is a supply and demand calculation, and we provided considerable definition about how supply is generated and calculated in the narrative of Chapter 7. For your information, supply will also be defined in the multimodal concurrency code amendments that are coming forward after the MIP is adopted. So future work on concurrency, we do have code amendments that will be necessary to implement multimodal concurrency. We expect that the council will direct the Transportation Commission to prepare code amendments for the council's consideration. And also part of the concurrency implementation strategy is to develop a development review guide for staff that haven't been participating in all these meetings to make sure that there's continuity of information to all the staff who would implement multimodal concurrency, describing the development review process and also a calculation for a bucket of running start projects that have been recently completed that still have capacity and provide connections that people can use. So we don't start with zero in terms of supply. So the appendix, as I mentioned, includes all of the background information on the performance targets and gaps. It also includes all of the equity maps and narrative that were discussed in previous commission study sessions. And the appendix also includes, just for historical purposes, an updated timeline for all the touch points that the MIP had with the commission during the course of 2021-2022. And on April 11th, it used to be April 4th, but council canceled its April 4th meeting. So now on April 11th, The Transportation Commission will transmit the MIP recommendation to the City Council in study session. During that study session, staff will ask Council, will seek direction from Council to initiate the next steps for the Transportation Commission / staff / consultant work program. We'll work on amendments to the Bellevue City Code to embed multimodal concurrency. That recommendation will be from the Transportation Commission to the Council, and we will work on sort of the details of implementation. And that will be a recommendation to the transportation director, since that's largely an administrative document and staff would be implementing multimodal concurrency using that guide. Okay, next and final slide. I turn the floor back to the chair to receive motions on the MIP and the transmittal letter.
So I am receiving motions.
Oh.
If somebody dares.
I'll make the motion to approve the MIP Volume 1, Volume 2, and the transmittal letter.
I'll second that.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I'm having trouble with my little hand thing. Okay. We have a motion on the table to approve the Final Mobility Implementation Plan, Volume 1 and Volume 2, in a second. Does anybody have any discussion? Commissioner Ting?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So a question, is this motion including the transmittal letter, or is it?
No, they're separate.
Okay, I thought I heard that the motion was for both.
It's the Volume 1 and the Volume 2, as I heard it. Is that correct?
Correct.
Sorry. Okay, my mistake.
I thought that I heard transmission letter as well in there. Or transmittal letter, excuse me.
Commissioner, Vice Chair, you're muted. I see you're speaking.
I may have confused the issue. I did say transmittal letter in my motion. So I will restate my motion to approve the recommended final MIP Volume 1 and MIP Appendix Volume 2.
And I'll second that.
Excellent. Any other points of discussion before we vote? All right. I will do a roll call for the benefit of our minutes. I know that is what is preferred. Vice Chair, I forget. Can the person that did the motion vote, Kevin? Do I just go? I have to leave that to the end, right?
You can go in any order you like.
Any order I want. Okay, Vice Chair Sash.
Approved.
Commissioner Beeson.
Approved.
Commissioner Kurtz.
Approved.
Commissioner Rippon, you're here now. Commissioner Rippon.
Approved.
Commissioner Helen. No, Commissioner Helen is the one that's not here. My apologies. Commissioner Ting.
Aye.
Unanimously approved. All right. Excellent. 50% done. Second motion. Does anybody have a motion? I can just go ahead and state it. Commissioner Beeson.
I'll make a motion to approve the MIP transmittal letter to the City Council.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
It's a motion to approve the MIP transmittal letter to the City Council, and I have a second. Now, opening up for discussion, Commissioner Ting.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move to append the MIP transmittal letter to include the additional language regarding project utilization, adequate levels of investment, enhanced TDM, transportation demand management strategies, and direction from council on next steps.
Excellent. And I believe we've all received that language, and now I've lost the, that it is now on our screen. Can you scroll down a little bit to see the right. So this is the red lines are shown in your screen. Would you like me to read that for the record, Kevin? Not necessary.
I don't think it's necessary.
Okay. All right. So we have, I think that the a small change to the project identification and prioritization section, and then we can move on a larger insertion of a paragraph and the final sentence of what now I realize that is our future task. I thought that was going to be a staff task. Does anybody have any discussion points about this amendment? Commissioner Ting?
A point of order. I think I need a second before we continue with the discussion.
Didn't somebody second this?
I'll second it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I did.
You did, yes.
Oh, my apologies.
Commissioner seconded it. Yeah, Commissioner Ting, Commissioner Kerr seconded. That was it.
I think Commissioner Kurtz seconded the, not Commissioner Ting, but the actual
main motion.
The movement of the video of this, yeah. Commissioner
Ting. I am the worst at motion protocol. This is where I should just lose my seat very quickly. All right, so we had a motion on the table for Commissioner Ting. We needed a second. Was that?
I'll second Commissioner Ting's motion.
Commissioner Rapoon has seconded the amendment. The amendment is in front of us. Now I can open it up for discussion. Does anybody? Oh, go ahead, Commissioner Kurtz.
I think the changes are good. I thank the both of you for the additional work that you put in on it.
Great. Thank you. Anyone else? I'm not sure, Councilmember Zan, if I can open the floor during an amendment. Is that to someone not in the commission? Does somebody have the answer?
Madam Chair.
Okay. I'm sorry, Councilmember. I would really like to hear your thoughts, but I'm focused on the amendment process here. Any other thoughts? All right. I wanted to say my intent is to, through our whole process, we've come to realize that this is this will require, even though we've gained a lot by this multimodal concurrency, we also have added complexity to the system and a higher level of responsibility to our leadership. And so I'm hoping that is made clear to council as we transmit this information, and that was my intent in adding this.
So, Madam Chair, to help you out, we'll entertain a vote on the amendments.
Thank you. So everybody in favor of the amendment, say aye. I don't think I need to have a roll call.
Aye.
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 Aye. I believe we have unanimous approval of the amendment.
Now you can vote on the main motion as amended.
Now we can vote in the main motion as amended. I will do a roll call for that one. Vice Chair Sash?
Agree.
Commissioner Beeson?
Agreed.
Commissioner Kurtz?
Approve.
Commissioner Rapoon?
Approve.
Commissioner Helen? Commissioner, Commissioner Ting?
Aye.
Unanimously approved. I survived. Okay.
Great. Thank you.
All right. So I believe that is it for this item, and Chris can go enjoy his family.
Cool. It's great to be in the background this time.
But this thank was you, great Chris.
Work. Yeah, really enjoyed working with y'all on this, but we still have more to do, as Kevin always likes to keep us going. We got to do brass tacks on some of the implementation pieces, so that'll be fun.
Thanks again.
Thank you. We're going to move on to the next item in the agenda is the comprehensive plan update. And this item is for information only, no action needed. I do not believe we even need a discussion on this topic, so I'll just defer to staff when to step and ask for clarifying questions. And Kate, is it?
Yes, thank you. As far as questions, if you have a brief question, you can ask it during the presentation, but otherwise I'll take questions at the end, if that's okay.
And Kate, I've made you co-host, so you can share your screen if you'd like.
Thanks. I was hoping that would be the time that you needed to do that. All right. So Thank you very much for having me at the Transportation Commission meeting. I am looking forward to working on this. I am the in our core team, we've kind of divided up the elements, and I am the liaison to the transportation element, I guess I'd say. So I'll be coming and talking with you quite a bit. So the comprehensive plan periodic update is what I'm talking about tonight. And Tara Johnson is also who is leading this project in the community development department. There we go. As Kevin said, this is for information only. We'll be coming back to you for direction in the future. On February 28th, Council launched the periodic update of the comprehensive plan and directed boards and commissions to contribute to the update in their sphere of knowledge. So for the Transportation Commission, that's the transportation element. And the recommendations that you will be making, you will be making those to planning commission that will then make the recommendation to council. So tonight I'm going to talk a little bit about the background of the comprehensive plan and how it relates to the Growth Management Act. I'll kind of outline the current plan and the reasons for the update. And then I'll go into the scope of the update and the process that we'll be taking, the community engagement that we are undertaking to do this update, and the next steps for the transportation. So the comprehensive plan is a requirement of the Growth Management Act, and it outlines the vision for how the community is going to grow over the next 8 to 10 years. The plan is scheduled to be adopted in 2024, and it's a vision for 20 years in the future. So we're looking out to 2044 in this plan. The vision includes in planner speak elements and in everyday language, that would be chapters. One of those is the transportation element. That will set guidelines for city actions and decisions going into the future. So it's one of the guiding documents that sort of guides documents like the MIP, which is updated more frequently. And it also guides other capital investments. So the current plan has a vision, and each of the chapters or elements has a narrative section that kind of describes the direction that that chapter is taking. And then it includes goals and policies as well within each of the elements. The comprehensive plan is divided into two sections. The first is volume one, and that's the main comprehensive plan. The second is volume two, and that is the neighborhood area or sub-area plans. That's where the land use map lives, is in volume two. So why are we doing the update now? Well, the Growth Management Act requires that it is updated every right now it's updated every 8 years, and we had a 1 year extension. So that's why we're at 9 years out from the last update, which was in 2015. To prepare for this, the Puget Sound Regional Council created a Vision 2050 document that sets the vision for the region as a whole. And they also have a document called the Multi-County Planning Policies, or MPPs, and that is policies that very broad policies for the region as a whole and counties. And then King County created a countywide planning policy document that includes growth targets. So the city worked with other jurisdictions to establish job and housing unit targets for the city for 2023, and that's reflected in the King County's countywide planning policies. In addition, the council has updated the vision, and we want to make sure that the comprehensive plan reflects Council's vision for the city. They are focusing on housing options and affordability, economic innovation, and protecting the environment. So those will be major pieces of the update. I mentioned growth targets. Growth targets are set in cooperation with other cities within King County, and they are looking at a horizon of 2044. So how many jobs and housing units do we want to add in the next 20 years? And it's within a framework of the larger metropolitan area. So the Puget Sound Regional Council looks at how the region is going to grow and then assigns that growth to the counties, and then the counties work with cities to figure out how that growth, how to plan for that growth in the county. Bellevue is a metropolitan job center. I don't need to tell you, I'm sure you are aware of how we've been growing in terms of jobs. Downtown Bellevue is an urban growth center. We have also established, or in the process of establishing, countywide growth centers as well. What we're looking to do in this is to have a more equitable jobs housing balance. So we recognize that we're growing with jobs a lot, and so we want to make sure that we're growing at least one housing unit for every two. One housing unit for every two jobs that are coming to Bellevue, so that we have we can address some of the transportation issues and as far as journey to work, and make sure that those that we're accommodating, that we're planning for all of that the housing that will be necessary to support those jobs. We have capacity for jobs within our current zoning right now, but we don't have capacity for our housing target. So our existing capacity is around 27,000 housing units, and we have a target of 35,000 housing units, and so we'll have to be looking for ways to add capacity, housing capacity to the city. Because of that, one of the things that we'll be looking at is the land use map, and that is part of the scope. We'll be looking at the broader categories and the relationship between the land use category and the zoning categories, as well as the countywide and regional centers and how growth is allocated within that framework. We will be looking at ways to expand housing options, affordable housing, and approaches to combating homelessness. Our goal is to create vibrant places at a variety of scales and locations. We also are looking to use an equitable approach and focus on underserved and underrepresented communities. We want to do that both in terms of how we're engaging with the public and have equitable engagement, make sure that we are including people who are not always at the table, but we also want to make sure that the outcomes of the policies are equitable in addressing injustice. So one of the areas that we're working on is addressing the legacy of discrimination in the city, trying to identify policies that can help remediate some of that that legacy. We're also emphasizing environmental sustainability and resilience. One of the bills that is currently in the legislature that looks likely to pass, I'm not sure of the exact status tonight, it has been changing very rapidly, is adding an additional climate and resilience element to the comprehensive plan and possibly extending the deadline. And overall, what we want to do with all of these is set the stage for future planning to make sure that we are moving into the future with a strong foundation. So the update process is 2 years. We're scheduled to adopt the plan in 2024. This right now we're in phase one. We're looking at updating the vision to align with council's vision, and we're starting our community engagement process right now. Later this year, we'll be drafting land use alternatives, and we'll be coming back to Transportation Commission with those land use alternatives. And those will go into the EIS. Next, we'll be looking at the policies that will lay the foundation for a lot of the plans that sort of come out of the comprehensive plan, and that's the time we'll be looking at a lot of the elements in the, or a lot of the policies and the transportation elements. And then after the EIS is complete, we'll be looking at our growth-related policies and updating those, and we'll be back with, to Transportation Commission as well. And then finally, in the final stage, we'll be revising and refining those policies to make sure everything is lining up and in the right place. I mentioned our community engagement strategy. We have started with the community engagement strategy. Tomorrow, a survey is going out to every household in Bellevue that they can. They can take the survey and give feedback on the vision. They think Bellevue is doing well and where it could improve. And we'll be incorporating that feedback into the revision to the vision. We'll be exploring livability through several data walks with the community. So we'll be looking at what does the data tell us about how we're growing and how we might grow in the future. And then we'll be laying the foundation for future planning. So we'll look at some of the foundational policies with the community as well through workshops and that type of thing. And then we'll be exploring the growth alternatives with the community. So they'll have some feedback as well on the alternatives that are in the EIS. And then finally, they'll have an opportunity to weigh in on the final draft and for all of those folks that like to wordsmith all of that final language. We want to make sure that we are including the community early and throughout the process. So we have several streams of engagement with the community. The first is public engagement events. We've already done some tabling at some grocery stores. And I mentioned the survey that's going out. But we'll also be hosting discussions and events. We have an event. We had one event already, and we're having another event on March 22nd to start the discussion, start the dialogue about this update. We also have four strategy teams that we will be engaging with throughout the process. And these strategy teams have some specialized knowledge or lived experience that means that they're looking at the comprehensive plan through a particular lens. One of those strategy teams is an equity strategy team, so folks that have a particular training or lived experience in looking at things through an equity lens. Of course, there is always public comment at board, commission, council meetings. That will be incorporated into the feedback, and there is the mandatory engagement that goes along with the EIS that is specific to the EIS, and that will also be included. And then, of course, board and commission will have, depending on the commission, will have begin providing direction for their the element that is relative to their expertise. All of that will go into the staff work and the recommendations for the draft plan, but it's not a one-way street. We will bring these back to the community and to the boards and commissions for review. Ultimately, this will the recommendation will be made to Planning Commission, and Planning Commission will make the recommendation to City Council to ultimately to adopt the update. So the types of outreach activities, we have direct outreach, mentioned a questionnaire to all households. We'll be sending announcements by mail. We also have some on-demand methods through Engaging Bellevue. That is already live, and we've had folks ask questions and we've provided some answers to those questions. There will also be surveys and discussion on Engaging Bellevue. We're also doing some in-person and virtual workshops. The March 22nd one will be virtual, but we're hoping that eventually we'll get to the in-person stage. We have been doing some tabling in-person at grocery stores outdoors. And then finally, we have a special emphasis on equitable outreach. We found with the sub-area plan update that we used cultural outreach ambassadors, and that was very effective in reaching some of the communities that have been less involved in the past. We currently have three cultural outreach ambassadors, and we've budgeted for a fourth that we haven't filled yet. We're also having all of the surveys and materials translated, and we are employing multilingual outreach as well. So the next steps, the upcoming meetings in 2022, I mentioned this process extends through 2024, but you know, it's hard to look out that far, so we'll just focus on 2022. We plan to come back to Transportation Commission in July with the draft land use alternatives, and we'll be looking for some direction from Commission at that time. And then in November, we will bring the draft of the transportation element policy revisions to Transportation Commission, again, for direction. So tonight is information only. As I said, it was initiated by council on February 28th. So we're just getting going now, 2 weeks in. They directed boards and commissions to be involved and to give direction on the transportation element in our case. So I would be happy to take any questions that you might have. Councilmember Ting.
Thank you for the presentation. For the strategy teams, who is the audience, or who gets to attend that?
So we're working on exactly the structure of those meetings. We will likely employ a consultant to structure that engagement, because we just don't have enough staff to do all of that. And so some of those might be individual meetings. They might all four meet together. We might have some interaction with the community as well, between the strategy team and the community. We're still working out exactly how those meetings will take place. Is there a concern that you have?
My question is, are the strategy teams open to the public?
You know, I would guess yes, but Tara, do you have a, I have not actually contemplated this.
Yeah, I don't think we've thought through that level of detail. I mean, generally any meetings that we have are open to the public. So it's, you know, we're still trying to figure out what that return to meeting in person is and various aspects around that, whether we're going to be having all of these meetings in person unless things change with COVID. So I think there are a few mechanics that we still need to work through.
My feedback would be to consider making them open to the public in the sense that not just being able to view, but also being able to participate as an equal participant as the other stakeholders. And that comes with some risks and issues, of course, because you have to manage that carefully. But I think there is a class of neighborhood leaders that would be able to provide significant feedback. And I would just want to make sure they have equal access and also equal notification time, like when they get notified of these meetings as the other stakeholders for these strategy teams. And finally, I think there's going to be two segments of the population that you're dealing with within Bellevue. The first being the general public that would like to be informed, but they need to be educated on the comp plan process. Mm-hmm. But you're going to see another segment, which is highly educated, very well versed in the mechanics of CPAs, et cetera. And I think there needs to be a mechanism where they can express their concerns in a direct, more debate format as opposed to an informational educational format. So two target audiences, one that's like, hey, I just like kind of like the NLG neighborhood leadership gathering meeting. They just want to hear what's going on. And you've got the other type, which is really focused on, I've got specific issues, tell me the pros and cons. And those people need direct engagement and direct debate in order to feel like they've been heard. Not necessarily to get what they want, but at least they've been heard. So I'd really encourage you to consider inviting those people to the strategy teams, figuring out how you manage that in a way that's productive, and then also coming up with additional community engagement meetings for the people that just have questions and would like to, you know, get educated.
Thanks. That's very valuable feedback. You know, I called on Commissioner Ting, and I didn't mean to usurp the chair's authority. I apologize.
No worries. I deferred to staff, so you're in your right.
I did want to address a couple additional things based on Commissioner Ting's comments. So we are thinking, thank you for that feedback. Brooke and I met with a group of neighborhood leaders a few, maybe a month or two ago. And so we heard similar feedback from you, I think, then. We've really been thinking through how to incorporate these two groups into our overall engagement strategy. And so our thought is we're planning for some longer workshops during the process where we'd have that opportunity to engage with both groups. Also, I would like to note that the strategy teams are pretty diverse. They're very focused on various different topic areas, but even within each of the strategy teams, we would imagine that, you know, if there's interest from the neighborhood community, that there would be opportunity for them to participate. So
thank you very much.
Yeah. Other questions? Let me stop sharing.
Do not see any hands up. So I think we're good. Thank you so much, Tate.
Thank you. I apologize. I closed my speaker, not stop. There we go.
There. Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
I'm going to move on to the Transportation Improvement Program, and I see Christy. And with our staff is seeking input today on some of the updates, and we've also requested an action to schedule a public hearing on April 14th. It's currently tentatively scheduled on April 14th for this 2023-2028 Transportation Improvement Plan program. I have a question before you get started. Does this require a motion, an official motion? or just concurrence?
For the public, hearing?
Yeah.
You've usually done it by motion. I'm fine with concurrence. I'm not picky.
I should practice motions anyway. Go ahead, Kirsty.
Well, good evening, commissioners. I am here once again to talk to you about the transportation improvement program. This year's update is for 2023 to 2028. So this evening, I'm asking for a little bit of everything, and action, some discussion, and giving you some information about the updates that we've done to the plan. So again, to remind you of a little bit of background on this program and what it does, I'll be showing you then the changes to the current 2022 to 2027 TIP, asking for the action, then I'll give you some ideas of our next steps in this process. So again, as you may remember from the last meeting that we had and talking about the transportation improvement program, one of the unique things about it is that it is not revenue constrained. So when you look at the bottom line dollar on the plan, it is billions. And that is okay, because it is what we would love to have if we had the resources, both financially and staff-wise, to be able to do this program. The projects are derived, they first come from the comprehensive plan, and then some of those go into long-range plans. We have our other functional plans like the transit plan, the pedestrian bicycle implementation plan. Those projects also, as you know, because we've just been finishing our transportation facilities plan process with you, some of those filter down to become part of that process, as well as then going into the actual funded CIP plan. Those projects that didn't actually make it to the TSP or the CIP are also still available to be able to become part of the transportation improvement program. So with that, we also are able to add other programs and initiatives. And we were here last month to be able to talk to you about the fact that we have now put our comprehensive transportation project list. The remaining projects from that weren't already in this plan have now been embedded into this plan. Along with other projects that are regional projects that might be done by other jurisdictions or entities that we would want to participate in. So again, then once we have actually formulated this TIP, which the draft was in your packet, we then submit those to both the Puget Sound Regional Council for the Regional Transportation Improvement Program, as well as to WSDOT for the State's Transportation Improvement Program, also known as the STIP. What this helps us with is this also is a granting mechanism. Often on our grants, the question is this in your TIP? And our question then can be yes. So for this year's round, the differences between what we have in our current 2022 to 2027 plan and what we're going to be doing for 2023-2028. Again, the TIP is broken down into four sections. The first section is the current adopted 2021 to 2027 capital investment program plan. So those are the projects that we have currently that are funded. The second section are the remaining projects that are in the transportation facilities plan. So our preliminary list for the 2022 to 2033 plan are in this section. Section three has those other unfunded projects that have taken place from analysis, from planning. This used to say the comprehensive transportation project list, but now that is not existing any longer. So it's just these other kinds of pre-design studies. And then again, section four, which is the purple section, is the regional or outside agency-led projects that the city might choose to participate in or show our good faith that we would want to participate in if it was something that was available. So this was detailed out in your memo, and happy to take questions on it if you have any when I am finished. But these are the changes that actually took place in the plan between the 2022-27 plan and this proposed 2023-28 plan. So in section one, again, the section for the capital plan, there were four new projects, and one project was removed. For section number two, which is the TFP, and you could probably assume that that one was going to have a lot of changes because of the update that we just made. We have 13 new projects going into that section. We have six projects that were removed, and then we actually have two that are transferring out of that section.
Section 3 had the other projects that were in, and we have one new project, and that was one of the comprehensive transportation project list projects that was remaining. We have 10 projects that are being removed, and we have 12 that are transferring sections. Basically, those are transferring into section number 2. And then in section number 4, we have one new project, and we have one project that is being removed. So tonight, what I'm asking you for is your approval of this proposed list to be able to bring it forward to the public hearing. Then I'm also asking for approval of the public hearing date. The public hearing is mandated through this process. And right now we have a tentative date of April 14th on the books. So your April meeting would be when we would hold the public hearing if approved. And then that moves on to the city council, and then we move on to actually submitting the plan. So first, do we have any comments on the proposed list?
Anybody have comments on the list or questions on the list? We don't have for Christy. Vice Chair. Vice Chair, go ahead.
Just a quick question. Christy, could you please remind me of the one project that was in the first category that was removed?
The one project that was in the CIP?
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry, I have to look at a different screen here so I can pull that one up and to be able to get it to you. Just one minute. Yes, that's the section of the Mountains to Sound Greenway that was completed. So it had been listed, because it also had grant funding, it had been listed as its own project in the CIP section. And it is completed, so that one can be removed from the plan now.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions or comments about the project? All right. If not, does shall we do one motion? Commissioner Beeson?
I'll make a motion to approve the proposed project list.
Do you have a second?
I'll second it.
So we have a motion to approve the proposed 2023-2028 TIP project list. And it's been seconded. If anybody has any comments, raise your hand. All those in favor. Oh, go ahead, Commissioner Ting. My apologies.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry for the late. So my question, I guess, is, is there anything controversial, or what would be the main, because looking just at the list, is there anything in here that you have concerns about, Christy, with regards to adds, removes, or changes?
No, not in this list, because we've vetted it pretty well when we looked at the comprehensive transportation project list to make sure that anything that was still viable, and we brought that to you last month and discussed those kind of things with you, that they were included, or that they had been, that what is now in the plan is, you know, the most updated version. And then I also spoke with our regional transportation advisor and feel very comfortable with the change that was made in the purple section to have a little bit more specificity about the Sound Transit, the ST3 new project, and actually really putting the project that's being removed into that as one of the projects that would be on there. So I don't have any reservations, and there isn't anything of big contention that's on this list.
So slightly loaded question. Is there anyone, are there any issues that others have presented that they might view as objections to this list that you've talked with?
No, not at this time. Okay. Again, it matches up with the projects that are in our CIP, the projects that are in our on our TFP's preliminary list, and the projects that are in our approved plans. Anything that are, you know, anything that is not, or anything again from the CTPL that was, you know, needing to be repealed, those have been removed. I believe that it's all fully covered. Yes.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I am going to move ahead with the voting on the motion that we have on the table. If you approve the proposed 2023-2028 TIP project list, please say aye.
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 Okay, the ayes have it. Do I have a second motion to set the date of April 14th on the public hearing?
I will motion that.
Have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion to approve the proposed TIP for the mandated public hearing on April 14th. We have a second. Any comments, discussion? All right, all those in favor say aye.
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 All right, the ayes have it. We got another motion today.
Yeah, we're doing pretty good. So just real quickly, let me go ahead and run down our process timeline. So the next time you see this list, we'll have a check off by the proposed list being compiled and actually you having approved it and approved the TIP hearing date. And then we'll come back for that public hearing. And at that meeting, should there be no issues, we would like to go for an actual finalization of that and your proposal to the city council. Along with that will come a draft recommendation letter that would go along with this TIP list. Right now we are tentatively scheduled for May 16th to go to city council for adoption. Should we run into any issues on the 14th, then that's why it's only a tentatively scheduled meeting. We would have to come back, you know, to for anything, any changes that you might have that can't be resolved on that evening. The one caveat to all of that is we do have to have this plan submitted to the state by June 30th. That is the deadline in which we have to have this information submitted in order to move on with the process and call it final. So I'll be back to you next month with the public hearing, and also I'm hoping to finalize that list. And then I will maybe or maybe not see you in May on this subject, but probably on the TFP maybe. And then we'll be able to adopt this. And for yet another year, we will be done with this process and we'll start gathering our projects and things all over again to be able to bring it to you the same time next year. So with that, I thank you for your time this evening.
Thank you so much, Christy. Excellent. We are doing great on our agenda. The next item is our last item of the study session is the curb management plan. This item is for information only, so no action is needed. I don't believe we need a commission discussion right now, but I will defer to the presenters on when to stop and ask for clarifying questions. Oh, and then Commissioner Ting, I see your hand up. Did you have
thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question on the feedback that we received regarding 150th Avenue Southeast. I was wondering whether that would be something I'm just trying to figure out where it gets inserted into our process.
Items that is not on our agenda today. So staff takes that information and responds to the issue, but it's not part of our agenda today.
Okay. But it wouldn't go on the TIP list, would it? I just don't know.
That type of project is in one of the programs in the neighborhood sidewalk program that Christy manages, or in the pedestrian bicycle access improvement program that I manage. So it's covered in programmatic form in the TFP.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. So I think, who am I handing this over to? Who's presenting?
Probably to Chris Iverson to start.
Chris?
Yeah, so I'll go ahead and get started. Thanks again for having us tonight. I was Lauren, I just saw you hopped on. Would you like to control the deck?
Yeah, either way. If it's easier for you to, go for it, but I'm happy to.
Okay. I have it pulled up, so I'll go ahead and share. And everybody can hear me okay? Great. All right. Well, yeah, thank you again for having us tonight. We are here to provide some extra information regarding the progress of the curb management plan. You might recall that At the January 13 commission meeting, we reviewed the scope of work and some status updates at that time. Since that meeting, we've made a lot of progress with the project, and we're excited to share some next steps as we move into our engagement process and eventually leading into our discussion about comprehensive plan policies related to current management. So just a quick outline for today. Like I mentioned, we'll be providing some project updates regarding the schedule and what's on deck. One of the main project items that we have been working on is what we're calling the state of the curb, which is effectively an existing conditions report of the curb in Bellevue. So our team at Nelson Agar will be presenting some of those findings. And then we'll be able to give you a sneak peek about one of the main topics in the actual body of the work, which is the curb typology, which is kind of this framework that we're establishing that will help us create that curb use prioritization that you might recall us discussing at the January meeting. So just as a quick recap, at this point, I believe you all remember us. I'm going to be the acting PM, or I am the acting PM from the city's perspective. Lauren and Evan are co-managing the team from Nelson Nygaard. And ultimately, this is a very collaborative and pretty comprehensive effort. So we're excited to keep moving on this. Ultimately, tonight, this is just information sharing. We will be kind of priming you up for the next engagement, specifically about comprehensive plan amendments and language development. Tonight, no action is needed on this item. I'd like to do a quick recap of the curb management plan scope. And again, this is essentially the same content that was at the Transportation Commission meeting in January. The intent of this planning effort is establishing new policies and guidance on our myriad of uses at the curb. One of the main tasks that we'll be tackling is the development of curb-related policy language. So this isn't a future slide, but just as a reference, the City Council at their February 14 meeting provided direction to begin a comprehensive plan amendment process to develop curb-related policies in support of the curb management plan, as well as directed the Transportation Commission to begin developing content for the plan itself as well. These top three bullets are items that the commission will be directly involved with, obviously the policy language, but also the curb prioritization framework, and coming up with some recommendations about establishing a dedicated curb management program. And like I mentioned at the February 14 meeting, the direction was provided to work with the Transportation Commission to develop curb-related policies as part of the annual CPA work plan in 2022, as well as develop content and recommendations for the curb management plan itself. So much more to come, and we'll be looking forward to working with you all throughout 2022. So with that, I'll pass it off to Lauren.
Thanks, Chris. I'm going to move us through some updates on schedule just to give you a sense of the different work streams going on and what's ahead that you'll be seeing in future meetings. There's been a lot going on. We have many different activities from engagement to analysis. So it has been a busy few weeks on the project, as Chris mentioned. We are currently this month working through six different focus group meetings. They're covering a range of topics from mobility services to local businesses, employers, including shuttle providers, residents, advocates, and a development group. We're halfway through these. Actually, the third one occurred today. And so those have given some rich insights, and we're looking forward to having the final results from those at the end of the month. And that'll continue to inform some of our understanding of existing conditions that we'll begin covering today. We also have our CURB Summit coming up on March 29th. And this is another really important part of our engagement approach, really focused on driving potential solution ideas and also educating a lot of stakeholders, internal and external, on best practices in the CURB management world. So this essentially all-day event on March 29th is just a couple of weeks away at this point, so we're in full planning gear for that event and very excited to see what it yields. Another engagement update is the CURB Management Plan questionnaire that's live on the project website and links to the Engaging Bellevue platform. And we have a pretty positive response rate so far, 156 as of recently. And then there's also a companion map-based effort in which we are trying to gain really place-based feedback, so particular pain points. And that one we're looking to drive further input on, but we're happy with the overall questionnaire results on the main body of the questionnaire so far. And so, again, a lot of these engagement streams are really active right now, and we have some initial highlights, but very excited to reflect back once we have full information. Leaving the engagement work streams, we've also been busy wrapping up our existing conditions report, and that's what we refer to as the state of the CURB in this project. So we have an iterative draft that is under city review, and it's going to stay with a few gaps pending future CURB data and utilization information, but it's really helped to garner a solid, consistent foundation of how things are working at the CURB today, and we're going to cover a few highlights of that this evening to give you a sense of some of the early findings. And we are also kicking off some of our more, strategic forward-looking work streams. They're listed here as 3.2 and 3.3. We just today had an internal kickoff for our task around identifying curbside programs and their relative pricing options and management options. So we're working through that and framing up how to assess what's appropriate there, how to measure costs and benefits. And so that work stream will be continuing in earnest over the next couple of months. And then on a fairly similar timeline, but it will take a little bit longer, we're working through this item 3.3, it's listed as the CURB use prioritization framework. And we're also going to cover that at the end of the meeting today or the end of this presentation today. Sometimes we refer to it as a topology. And this is really a core piece of how to map different policies and interventions to different parts of the study area in Bellevue. So it's a really important part to get right. And we'll share our early framework of how we're working through CURB topologies. And that will be something that will continue to get tested and refined and will really be a foundational piece of the final CURB management plan. Great. So next up, we'll move through some of the early findings of the State of the CURB report. This is one of the early tasks to help give us a good foundation. As I mentioned, it's really a collection of existing conditions and operations findings. So this slide shows our study area. And a big reason that we're pursuing this project and helping you with this project is that so much is changing at the CURB. this map shows the study area boundary, and then it also is showing some of the different plan developments. It goes out of date the second you put it together because of the rapid pace of change and the large number of developments, both residential and office. Certainly a good reminder of how forward-looking we want to be sure to make our recommendations so that they can phase in as the front blocks change. And of course, we're also responding to the East Link extensions and future stops. That's also something we want to make sure our topology framework and our recommendations help resolve how to manage curb near stations and stops. And a lot of this is happening, you know, a lot of this change is happening quickly over the course of just a few years. So it's really prescient for us to be thinking about how to make sure the curb management plan is useful when it's finalized and then really can stay ahead of upcoming changes and also be nimble for unpredictable changes in the future, not just with, you know, the city's growth areas, but also with mobility changes. So lots of things to stay ahead of here. And on the next slide, this is showing some of the thought process around how we put together the state of the curb document. We wanted to make sure it was really answering a lot of the core questions that we're working through to support the later stages of the project. So these are some of the questions that we're asking ourselves as we advance. And so the state of the curb work also responds to these questions. So in section one, we're trying to make sure we have a really good understanding of where growth is happening and how it's affecting mobility behaviors, how it might affect future mobility behaviors. We do want to make sure that all of our core parts of the curb management plan can support growth and address change and have a lot of relevance far into the future. And then really just making sure we have a firm vision for what the curb should do, including values and principles that later can lead to measuring performance and keeping true to those values and principles as things change. We're also in the second section asking ourselves questions around who's using the curb, what is their experience like. There's some pending data in this section around inventory and demand, but we really also want to eventually add further information assessing exactly how the curb is managed and regulated, who's getting how much space, where, and then how is it performing? How is the demand working today? So we'll look forward to adding that, but we have the rest of the sections completed in the meantime. In the third section, we are analyzing which of your existing city plans are impacting and providing guidance on curb management, whether it's direct guidance or information on modal priority in different parts of the transportation network. So really trying to connect this to the mobility improvement plan and all of the different modal plans so that this is complementary to those and taking cues on priorities rather than redoing or conflicting with existing bodies of work. And that's a big asset actually for us, entering this body of work, having a firm grasp on what your priorities are so that we can translate that to the curb. And then lastly, we are trying to address or trying to assess at this stage a clear understanding of who's responsible for curb management, what are the processes look like. We want to make sure that a lot of our recommendations are administratable, and there are a lot of different parties involved in curb management. So making sure that everyone is working in the same direction is definitely a goal for this overall body of work and something we wanted to include in the state of curb. So I'm going to advance with some high-level findings. This is not the kind of conclusive body of work, but just to give you a sense of some of what we're finding so far. So the theme of ongoing growth and change really can't be overstated. You all were very clear with us that that's something you needed this project to address. And so we are starting with a firm understanding of many of those changes. And of course, this project is set against the backdrop of some epic broad changes as well. COVID has affected so many parts of our life, but also our travel patterns. And we know that we need to stay nimble on predicting new traffic issues, responding to all of the things that are changing in our lives related to the pandemic as well. And of course, we've covered the growth dynamics, and you know, the main takeaway there just being that any curb competition there is today, we really expect it to be a lot more competitive in the future. And so we want to make sure that we have a clear roadmap for how to navigate different allocation and management decisions, knowing that there will be more demand on space and there will be a greater need to make sure that all of the different curb pressures are working together. And of course, also responding to transit adjacent curb pressures, which have a slightly different dynamic. Another finding that I want to highlight on the next slide is really this analysis of the curb's interaction with other parts of the transportation network and with private property. We do want to make sure that, you know, we're looking at how curb relates to our two streets and to facades. So I think you're building on some strengths here. You do have strong elements, starting with wide sidewalks, a fairly cohesive street facade, good planter strips and lighting, and other features that I think are a good foundation. I would say our big takeaway here is that there's just a lack of consistency on how some of these features are applied on every street. And so certainly that desire for consistency that we're hearing in focus groups as well would be something we would want to take into consideration of different options at the next stage of the project. So we do want to build on some of the strengths around strong design principles, and then address some of the challenges around consistency and having a holistic set of tools to improve curb management. On the next slide, we are also hearing this in focus groups, which is adding a qualitative layer to what we noticed during our state of curb review. That the pilots have been really helpful in testing different technologies and testing different allocation opportunities. And by pilots, I mean the full range of interventions that have been tried in recent years, including during the pandemic. That level of responsiveness, I would say, is really coming through in focus groups as well. We're hearing people react to those pilots and give feedback on them. So I think it has been successful in giving exposure to different curb management principles and, you know, some fairly bold ones. So just looking ahead and where we're at now and pursuing a curb management plan, I would say that we really want to make sure that these pilots are connected, cohesive, reflective of broader curb management goals so that they can be a little bit more connected and holistic in the future. So really building to something greater than the sum of their parts. So that's something we're noticing and would like to carry forward into the next phase of the project as well. And we know that there will also be future pilots you'll want to entertain. And so we want to address which gives some direction in the eventual curb management plan as well about how to connect those to the broader vision, not just looking back. And another critical finding I want to highlight is around enforcement. And this is just a really important element to examine anytime we're talking about curb management. It's really difficult for a lot of cities to get right, and something that deserves a lot of thoughtfulness and creativity. And I think no surprise, we did find that enforcement was fairly limited, that some of the parties were decentralized. And so there were a number of dynamics around those relationships between different groups involved in enforcement. And thanks to a lot of you for sharing some feedback about how those functions are working today. So we know that we're going to need to look eyes wide open at how enforcement is operating and give some creative solutions there. Enforcement is surprisingly costly. I don't know if that's always obvious to the average kind of member of the public. And, you know, in Bellevue, it's difficult to find options for how to offset that expense with a clear revenue stream. So that's just an operational challenge that's a reality and something we wanted to note in our summary. And of course, citation fees are not covering the cost of enforcement. We know that with a variety of curb pressures and a lot of future curb pressures expected, this curb management plan is a good opportunity to rethink pricing different curb uses. And so that'll be, that'll be some content to look into for the next phase of the project. Another finding, curb management in general is also quite dispersed throughout city government. So many different departments are taking on different roles. There is not dedicated staff. And this, you know, there's some strengths to this in that the collaboration it brings is important and necessary. So we certainly do not want to look unkindly upon that. But we do find that there is a lack of a central organizing party to bring those departments together and really lead with a consistent voice all of the different aspects of curb management. So we want to keep all of these groups involved, but we do need to look into what kind of organizational adjustments would allow these curb priorities to be deployed consistently. I think partnerships and collaboration will always be an important feature in the curb management plan due to the very broad nature of what happens at the curb and the variety of modal pressures that are using the curb and whose needs need to be considered and prioritized. And then last but not least, we did find that the fee structure at the curb was also inconsistent. Some uses are being charged and some aren't. The rules of how you can operate at the curb and who's encouraged or not are quite inconsistent. And so given that the curb management plan has an opportunity to make sure that different curb pressures are on good grounding with how much space they get and how it's managed and making sure that those decisions are tied back to vision and goals, we did want to note that there are some inconsistencies today. And so that'll be a point of analysis for the task 3.2 that I mentioned earlier, and we'll continue to look at how different curb users are treated and do some assessment of if there is more we could do to make those consistent and encourage results that are in line with your goals. We do expect that the curb users will just continue to grow. We heard from a number of mobility providers who are looking at Bellevue and planning to expand in Bellevue. And so I would say that approach for how we allocate space is only going to get a little bit more complicated. So we also want to look ahead to what we think may happen and make sure that pricing structures are looking ahead to future use so that you're not, you know, kind of reacting to each new curb use as it comes. So that summarizes some of our existing conditions findings, and I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Evan Costaliola, who's going to introduce the curb topology piece of the project. And as I said earlier, this is really a foundational piece that connects our understanding of how the curb is operating, our understanding of your vision and values around the curb, and carries forward and applies policies and interventions to different parts of the study area.
And Evan, to interject, I saw Commissioner Ting has his hand up and has for a while. Just wanted to make sure we address this question quickly.
My first question is, when did you want to take questions?
Good question. Let's go ahead and wait till the end, and we can toggle back in the slideshow if that works.
Sounds good.
All right. Thank you to Lauren for teeing this up. you know, in her intro, you kind of, I'm thinking that there's a lot of things that she said is included in a curve typology, and it's right. It's intended to kind of do a lot and be a bit of a workhorse. I'm going to give you a quick intro in terms of how we're thinking about the curve typology concept here in Bellevue. You know, our current thinking is really based in a lot of the work that we've done in other cities. But also we've gathered a lot of feedback internally and also through our work in the focus groups and external engagement that we've done. And, you know, with all that engagement and kind of the different potential elements that can be layered into curve typology, this is really shaping up to be pretty detailed, a detailed and workhorse element of the curve management plan. It's intended to do a lot, right? It's not only aligning the curve priorities for curves along or curves throughout the growth border to their appropriate curve context, but it's also nesting many, if not all, of the curve management plan's recommended policies, management tools, and other features into each curve type, and then actually allocating them spatially throughout the growth corridor block by block. So when the city is actually adopting the curve management plan, they're actually adopting the curve typology itself. That's the mechanism that's going to drive a lot of the action once we're gone and you're in implementation. In many ways, the way that we like to think about curve typology is to think about it as curve zoning. It intends to indicate the appropriate uses of the curb by location. And, you know, that's largely because it reflects and addresses a lot of the different factors and conditions that are present at the curb. Some of the factors that we're beginning to layer into this typology are listed in the little blue boxes. These are everything from existing land use and future land uses, but those are, you know, land uses typical of any type of typology, not just a curve typology. But we're also layering in factors similar to, or related to modal priority, priorities that were identified through the mobility implementation plans. We're connecting the dots between plans. We're indicating where there might be where the highest and best use might be, you know, mobility uses or network improvements related to transit and bike related investments. We're factoring in areas where there might need to be some focus on access management, areas where there's a lot of curb cuts, and even thinking through how urban design is factored into the design and operation of curbs, and then over time how that changes. We want to make sure that the curb typology is flexible and responsive to changing demands and changing conditions in the city. Next slide. So what does a curb typology typically do? As I mentioned, it tends to do a lot, but we really boil it down to four different elements. First and foremost, we start to give a sense of what are the types of uses that are pretty typical on any given curb type. And so that can be anything from movement of people and goods to accessing the curb for people that are kind of connecting to adjacent land uses, goods that need to be delivered, but also staying spaces and people spaces. So we'll layer those out or list those out. Then we start to apply what curb uses of those curb uses that we list out, what curb uses are truly the priorities at each curb, block by block. The goal of this is not to say definitively on this block, D1 priority is this one use. It's to indicate where there might be a few highest and best uses that are possible, and it will inform trade-off decisions and decision-making processes. The third element is to actually indicate and nest the city policies, the management tools, and the intended curb experiences directly into the design and operation of the curb. And then finally, you know, again, we want to be really responsive to the future conditions of Bellevue in certain areas of the growth corridor. Today, it's fairly auto-oriented. Certainly, this is going to change over time. Different parts of the corridor are going to become much more walkable and transit oriented. And so the curb typology is intended to layer in new priorities as those changes occur. Next slide. So the typology is intended to be applied as a series of layered factors. What we do is run the factors through a data-driven and systematized process to define and allocate curb types according to the different contexts in the growth core. What we're doing then after the more kind of data-driven typology assignment is then run it through a manual process. It's just gut checking, doing a little bit of ground truthing, and then it refines the actual systematized process to make sure that the curb uses and the curb priorities that we've identified are truly the right set of priorities. And then what we do is layer, we take these layers and then we actually refine them throughout the process. So it's a bit of an iterative process. The example that you see on the right are just a few of the types of factors that would be layered in. Obviously, I want to call out the mobility implementation plan. That's a key layer that's going to be factored into the process and part of the systematized data-driven the data-driven process to actually identify different uses and priorities. Next slide. And so I think this is where I'm stopping, but I do just want to make it really clear, the typology is not just a list of different uses and priorities. It is intended to then take those priorities and apply the recommended policies that are going to be coming through the curb management plan, assign them actually spatially. So it's doing a lot, but it's going to help you make important trade-off decisions in the future.
Great. Thanks, Evan. And just as a quick segue, I think the simple image does a pretty good job of alluding to what I had mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, which is some of the work regarding comp plan policies specifically. Again, staff will be presenting some initial recommended draft policies to be added as part of the 2022 CPA. Some of those policies will likely be action-oriented and very use-specific. Some of them will be fairly broad, like referencing the curb management plan to make decisions. And I think that's something that this commission should consider when we're starting to advance this work. So, again, this is sort of a walkthrough of where we stand today. This sequence of how we're going about this work is relatively similar to how this commission worked with the mobility implementation plan, where everybody here kind of vetted policies, transmitted those policies to Planning Commission, and then began actually digging into some of the meat of the MIP. This project is going to look and feel somewhat similar, where right now we're sort of at the draft policy development stage, where we are collecting feedback, collecting ideas, doing some public engagement. And that is all helping inform some initial draft policy language that will be circulated into the CPA process. So once we come back to you, we start engaging with this more directly, we'll eventually get to a position where this commission will transmit some recommended policies to Planning Commission, and then Planning Commission will take that through the CPA process. If all goes well and those policies are adopted, again, those policies will point to some of the recommendations in the curb management plan itself. So, the CMP will hold some of these draft typologies. They'll hold some other recommendations that this commission will be working on. Lots to come, and it'll be an exciting process to move throughout the year. So tonight we are not presenting our suite of staff recommended policies yet. Ultimately, we want to make sure that we give enough space for the public engagement process to conclude in earnest, or at least to progress in earnest, which we're anticipating pretty much for the next 4 to 5 weeks or so. Ultimately, we will be getting to a position where we'll be presenting some draft policies after we collect all this feedback. And again, similar to other CPA processes, we'll be adding or we'll be recommending adding, modifying, and removing comp plan policies to better align with the significantly changed conditions of the curb specifically. This table on the bottom is just a suite of some potential policy concepts. They're not necessarily policy language recommendations yet. They're just some teasers of sorts to what you might actually see in future settings. So, you know, again, we just based off of our initial review, doing the state of the curb and developing some work, we're looking at adding policy support for better curb placemaking and activation. We're thinking about curb mobility hubs, which are, you know, these multimodal zones where transit and vehicle and micromobility like bike share all come together and all function at the curb a lot of times. We'll be looking at amending some language specific to some of these new mobility use cases like, you know, ride share and urban freight and micromobility, like I mentioned. Like I was alluding to before, we're hoping to have some policies actually support some of the recommendations in the curb management plan and some recommendations to support a curb management program that will be kind of a central hub at the city to think about how we are planning for and managing curb spaces into the future. So again, just a preview at this point, but hopefully it gets your mind thinking about some of the subject material as we dive into the policy next time. The next steps I think are important here for this commission to recognize. We will be coming back to you on April 28th. That commission meeting will be a deep dive policy workshop for the curb management plan. To make sure that you all have enough time to review policies, what our plan is at this stage is to transmit the staff recommended suite of policies and place them in the packet for your April 14th meeting. So you'll be receiving a packet of information. It will have the draft policies, and that will essentially give you a couple more weeks of review time to look at them, start thinking about this versus otherwise, which we would give you, you know, a week's time just with the packet in advance. So stay tuned for that. You know, again, you'll likely see this in early April, and that will be the first look at the policies. So with that, I will pass it back over to the chair, and thanks again for having us tonight.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks, Lauren and Evan too. Commissioner Ting, you had a question.
Yes, two quick clarifying questions. First, on slide 17, on the graph, can you point out where do Uber and Lyft fit into that bar chart?
So is it this one?
Yeah.
So the commute mode share, this is an interesting slide simply because we received this information from the American Community Survey. And that does not get into the granularity of, the toggle there. I'll continue to talk, but the ACS doesn't get into the granularity of some of these new mobility use cases. It doesn't track, commute by those types of modes. And, some of the data we were trying to find in advance of this meeting actually was mode share and mode split during the COVID era, which we were not able to find simply because the commute trip reduction and the TDM reporting it wasn't there because most large offices and companies were not commuting the same way. So hopefully long term we'll see that, but that's ultimately out of our control. It's more of a census and a tracking system.
Okay. Do you have any idea of where that's sort of landing, or is it just an unknown at this point?
I am actually not sure. I think that would be a question for our our demographers and our CTRs, but I can find more information and bring that to you at our next meeting.
And the second clarifying question, thank you. The second clarifying question is the mobility providers that are looking to expand into Bellevue, can you tell us who those are?
Sure, I know Lauren, you mentioned that. I'll pass it over to you if you had thoughts based off of the focus group.
Oh, you know, I'd have to reference back to the notes. In the mobility provider focus group, we had a really good broad representation of delivery services, scooters, transit, taxis, car share. And so I didn't mean to overemphasize that point, but what I was getting at is that in the discussion, a lot of providers were not yet operating and were referencing. So it might be better, Chris, for you to speak to kind of the official status, but that was more representative of mobility provider services goal or intent of operating.
Any more comments on that question, or can we just table it for now?
Sorry, about which question? About the mobility providers?
Yeah.
I think that's probably all for now.
Okay. All right, thanks. Those are the clarifying questions that I have for now. I have some other questions, but I guess I'll yield back to other clarifying questions.
Anyone else have any questions for the team? Commissioner Kurtz?
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to go like a little deeper and kind of understand like what those typologies are. Like, it sounds like, one of them might be this, mobility hub concept. I'm kind of expecting you to like describe these different types of curb uses. And then it's kind of like, this model would put them on a map and you'd be able to see this map of where, the data-driven analysis kind of outlines which curbs to be, are we going to get to see any of that? I'm wondering, before we get to the policies.
Yeah, so I mean, at this point, we're just starting the process of developing the actual typology itself and creating the curb types themselves. Just more categorically, the way that, we've done this in other places that we've worked is to think through, focus on what the predominant land use is, and then the predominant type of street. So you mix those and that creates a very unique type of transportation operating environment, whether that's, throughout the public right of way or just on the curb. Another thing to consider is, and this gets back to the idea of the changing orientation of the street or the changing orientation of the curb. So we may indicate that certain curbs are more auto-oriented currently and what the directionality of the curb might be based on a variety of different factors. So it might be like a sliding scale from auto orientation to transit orientation or auto orientation towards, a more people-focused kind of orientation. Very preliminary. In terms of timing, I think that this is happening alongside the development of policy. Chris, I don't know if you wanted to give some specifics there.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that it's important to remember how much activity happens at the curb.
Mm-hmm.
If you are traveling along the curb, you're in a travel lane, you're in a bike lane, that could be considered a movement function. You are moving along the curb versus if you're parked at a curb or you're getting picked up or dropped off at a curb, if you're a delivery person, you're delivering a package at the curb. That's not so much a throughput function. That's more of an access function. You're accessing the curb and, doing business or making that transfer. And then, of course, there's this third category of placemaking, which is, kind of its own separate category. So just as a, kind of as an initial thought exercise, you can kind of imagine that some of those ideas will likely be within the curb typology framework. Movement, access, placemaking, some other functions of how the curb is interacted. And then as far as policy goes, you know, again, I think there's a distinction between the comprehensive plan policies that we'll be working through the CPA process and curb policies as we speak about them, like in an operational way. You know, a curb policy would be if you go out in downtown Bellevue right now and you see a street that has 2-hour parking, you could consider that a policy technically. It's an operational policy. It's not a comprehensive policy. So it's trying to be a little bit more specific. So the comp plan policies will, again, this commission will be working on them and we'll be developing recommendations, but we're hoping staff is proposing at this point to have comp plan policies and the curb management plan speak to each other, make sure that the actions that are in the CMP are referenced by comprehensive plans themselves. So like Evan was mentioning, you know, we're kind of in the midst of developing all of this material, and you will certainly see all of it in upcoming meetings, both the policies and the eventual outcomes and the recommendations of the typology and other elements in the CMP itself.
Okay. Commissioner Ting?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you share the results so far of the survey? And just send that to us in an email, Excel, whatever, just so that we have an idea of the not only the answers, but also the free text fields to see what people are saying. And second, how are you articulating the priorities behind the goals so that we can get a better idea on how the policies will be prioritized? Because I understand from the early slide that, you know, a main goal or maybe the goal is to support growth and change, but that's a somewhat, and it's not a very clear goal in the sense of it doesn't help define the priorities and for the policies that you're going to create. So I'd like to get a better understanding of what are the driving principles behind how you're creating the priorities, which will then obviously prioritize the policies and the uses.
Sure. Yeah, I'll jump in on this one. That's a great question. And I think that I might actually tee Kevin up in a little bit to talk about how this relates to the MIP specifically, because I think they are interchangeable in some areas. The priorities that you're mentioning and how we're kind of coming up with them, again, I might actually toggle back to the slide when we start talking about the introduction of typologies, curb typologies. We are filtering in multiple different pre-existing and pre-approved long-range transportation plans as part of this body of work. So you can kind of imagine that the city has on the books today, we have a pedestrian and bicycle master plan. We have a transit master plan. We will have the mobility implementation plan. All of these different planning documents both have kind of broad recommendations, but they also have lines on a map. And when we start thinking about the curb typology, we will be referencing those documents to see if there are specific streets that have a given priority just based off of a review and an evaluation of all of our master plans to see if a curb should have a priority. So like if you can kind of imagine any given street in Bellevue, if let's say the ped bike plan shows that is a bicycle priority route and no other plans that exist today show other priorities, it doesn't show anything there. The logic would say maybe we should consider that as having bicycle movement as the priority along the curb versus other uses. So that's just one example, but that's kind of the way that we're hoping to use already pre-existing conditions and pre-existing plans to filter in to the recommendations. And then Kevin, do you mind if I tee you up and kind of talk about the schedule of the MIP briefly and how that the next steps on that might correlate with this? Or is that a little premature? Maybe I should hold my tongue.
Oh, thanks, Chris. And I would look backward to the MIP rather than forward to implementation. And I would refer to the layered network concept that's embedded in Chapter 2 of the MIP. The layered network references exactly what Chris was talking about with respect to separate plans have their own identified prioritization and project intent and such. And the purpose of the layered network is to make sure that all of those separately intended plans and projects are evaluated in a way that meets the community's overall intent, so that one mode is considered in the context of everything else, including the land use that it supports. So in terms of curb typologies, it's kind of the same thing. There's the three types of typology that Chris mentioned, but they're in the context of everything else that's going on, including the land use, which is a really important part of this. So I would just look back to the MIP Chapter 2 and then look forward to how the Mobility Implementation Plan Implementation Guide incorporates that direction.
Okay, I think that the curb use, though, would actually superset the MIP in the sense that there are things like urban design and where is it? I thought there was something in here about public spaces and things like that for restaurants. So I guess my feedback here is thinking about how you articulate the priorities behind how you make the decisions around curb management in a way that basically helps people understand how those choices are being made. And then, of course, my first point was, can you share the results of the questionnaire?
I would be able to share the status as of now. I would mention, though, that the survey will be complete on April 15th. So it's open until April 15th. And we were planning on coming back to the commission with the final results. So it might be more fruitful to wait until the end of the questionnaire.
That's fine. Thank you. And I did have actually one last question, but does anybody else have any thoughts before I speak again?
I don't see any other hands.
Okay. So I guess what this other question is sort of rolling up into is, what does success look like based on what we know in terms of council priorities and community and other feedback, stakeholder feedback? Like what does a successful curb typology prioritization usage, how do we articulate that to people?
Sure. Maybe I'll pass it over to Lauren and Evan just for some, I'd love to know your expertise on projects that you've worked with in other communities, and then I can chime in with maybe the Bellevue context afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the way that we're proposing, and this is inspired by existing city policy as well, and then also informed by curb management best practices. I would say that success would look like the curb reflecting your ambitious mobility plan. So we got into some of that, that it is fulfilling its role as toward your mode split goals, that it is serving to connect all of your priority modes, that it is kind of treated like the asset it is, and you get a sense of intentional allocation and management of space, again, reflecting the modes you're trying to see more of and make sure that they're represented at the curb. We would want it to be multifaceted, so allow different kinds of curb uses. Increasingly so. I think that's come through quite a bit in existing policy and from the focus groups as well. And then, again, I think we've already kind of discussed how it should match your goals. And some different criteria that we're proposing to use for this project and looking for feedback on would be around equity. So the curb is a broad asset, but also there's a, you know, a limited amount of it. So making sure that it's used to match your priorities and then who needs it most is a feature of the project. So we would want to make sure that, for example, no priority need was left behind, whether that's accessibility, transit, amenities at the curb, or something that can be frequently left behind in different cities. We haven't found that here, but certainly something to keep an eye on for future performance metric. We would want to make sure that space is used efficiently. Given that there's increasing number of pressures, we would want to make sure that you feel, and that users, more importantly, feel like the space is used well, that it's balanced, that it's effective. We also would want to make sure that it's user-friendly. So a sense of being able to tell what the rules are for operating there, no matter which mode you're using, I think that's a priority, and that also did come through a bit in the focus groups. Internally, I think it's also important that there be clarity around how to make decisions, especially as there are kind of increasingly complex demands on the curb. Just a clear guidance to apply vision consistently. So that sense of when to say yes or no to which users, and how to organize space consistently so that all the curb users sort of feel there's cohesion and fairness behind how space is allocated and managed. And then I think we've already covered the resilience piece and you know, being able to keep up with future flexibility.
Thanks. That helps a little bit. I mean, it's obviously kind of in broad strokes, you're talking general principles. So thinking about how those focus in on Bellevue specifically. So, you know, one example is how do we think about PNCs like Uber and Lyft? Is that something that we want to, you know, broadly support in terms of curb usage? Is that something that we want to, you know, manage at its current level? Or is that something that we would rather encourage other modes? I don't know the answer to that question. And I think that somehow needs to tie into what are the goals behind curb management so that you can make an informed policy around that. So that's one example of, you know, where I'd like a little bit more clarity.
So I'll just respond to that really quickly. So the city of Bellevue has limited ability to actually regulate to the level that I think you're referring to. That being said, we can organize and prioritize space accordingly or according to the city's priorities. So that's one way you can go about this. I just want to mention one other thing related to the five curb performance criteria that Lauren ran through. You know, if you were to read them out, it speaks differently to different users, right? So the actual customers of the curb, you know, people that are using the curb, but also decision makers and staff as well. It, you know, it's intended to be multifaceted, and you know, we wanted to make sure that we're reflecting that both for the public, but also for folks within the city of Bellevue or the DMT.
Great, thank you very much.
All right, I don't see any more hands up. So I think, did you have any closing remarks, Chris?
Nothing more specific than I'd already presented, other than, you know, again, we're looking forward to working with you on developing these recommendations. You know, we'll be digging into the curb typologies soon enough. We'll be talking about curb policies. We'll be talking about program development and curb access pricing across the board. These will all be subjects in 2022, so stay tuned.
Thank you so much. Thanks, everyone. We are going to move us along to our next item, which is the approval of minutes. We've got the February 10th, 2022 minutes on our agenda. And I have, I myself have a slight correction, but wanted to read for the record. The last sentence, which is attributed to me, was non-coherent. I'm hoping that's not the way I sounded. But I believe what I intended to say was that the role of elected officials to fully fund transportation needs and responsibly move the needle in making improvements must be made clear. And so that's going to be a correction that's going to be in the in the minutes. Does anybody else have any corrections that need to be on the record? All right. So are there any objections to my corrections as stated? Hearing none, correction is approved. Any further corrections? Hearing none, the minutes are approved. So thank you. We got to, we don't have any unfinished business or new business, but we do have oral and written communications. Let's see if we have any. We still have folks with us. Thank you for hanging in there with us today. If you would like to make a statement, please feel free to raise your hand. Okay. Well, thank you for accompanying us tonight. So, Kevin, next up is the commission calendar. And now I'm really curious if we're going to have an April 28th meeting.
Oh, you will have an April 28th meeting, and it'll be all curb management. It's good stuff. But before then, we've got an April 14th meeting. And on April 14th, as you know, you will have a public hearing on the Transportation Improvement Program. Christy will be back to join us for that. We're assuming that the council will provide direction to the commission and staff to develop multimodal concurrency code amendments. And, you know, staff will present some preliminary recommendations on code amendments on the 14th. You'll see different staff, some familiar faces with the mobility implementation plan. Chris and I will be present, but also you'll see other staff that have been involved behind the scenes on developing the code amendments for multimodal concurrency. So those two items are up for the 14th, in addition to the introduction to the curb management policies. This will be just presented as a staff report, and there'll be no discussion on that topic on the 14th, just for the commission's information in preparation for the workshop on April 28th. Just also not on the commission's calendar, but on the council's calendar, April 11th is the transmittal of the mobility implementation plan, the council, and Arciante is available for that evening, and other commissioners are welcome to join us to listen in on the council conversation.
Okay. Do we have two meetings in May or one meeting?
One meeting in May.
One meeting in May. Great. So we are on to our last topic of the agenda. We had a very full agenda, and I am very proud we made it through with 15 minutes to spare. Are there any objections to adjourning the meeting? Hearing none, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
And good night.
Commissioner Helen, thanks for joining us at the end. I noted that you were here.
Thanks, everybody.